Right. Well, and with that, you know, I want to bring up the example of why student journalism right now is having its moment, and that's Northwestern football and Northwestern athletics.
That's a great example.
And, you know, their student newspaper last week, you know, reported what no one else had reported, what was really going on in the football program. And, you know, that report came out after the coach had been suspended, and then their report resulted in the coach getting fired.
Amazing.
And, you know, the love that program got on social media from professional journalists for their reporting was stellar. And, you know, the tweet that I retweeted and praised most of all came from Pat Forty, which was, "Colleges, fund your student journalism programs." And, you know, he retweeted their link. And, you know, I'm like, damn straight, fund our programs. You know, when we report this kind of news, colleges tend to cut our money because they don't want that negative publicity.
Right.
And, you know, here you have professional journalists saying they're doing the best journalism we've seen. You should be funding this on a daily basis, because while it may give your college a black eye in this area, it's giving your college a very positive eye in this area.
Yep.
Because the professional media are sitting up and taking notice of what your students are doing.
Yep. Right. Well said.
Welcome to the News Nirvana Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. The News Nirvana Podcast features conversations with media professionals from across the country, highlighting our ever-evolving business models and showcasing the strong and effective journalism produced each and every day. This podcast is made possible to you by the generosity of Blox Digital. Blox Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blox Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive, and you can connect with them at BloxDigital.com. Hello, and welcome back to the News Nirvana Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. Today, we are jumping back into the world of student journalism, which is, I like that we get to do this every once in a while, because we'll talk about training the next generation of this great industry. And I love my guest this week. It's an old buddy of mine, Matt Birdmeyer. We were reporters together long, long, long ago. And then also with us is Stephen Chappell, the advisor at Northwest Missouri State University, one of my rivals back when I was in college. But we'll be nice to him now because he's running an awesome program. And actually, I love the idea of a business class. And this has been a topic on this podcast several times, of especially those that come up on the editorial side. The knowledge of the business of news is just not there. It was never taught to us. And there are a lot of people, Matt, you talked about news deserts happening. So people start up their own newspapers. I started up my own. We've had other guests on, you know, the East Sider in Los Angeles that, you know, his job at the LA Times went away, and now he's covering neighborhoods. And you have to learn the business side. So is this something that class is kind of prepping for, so that the people actually know a little bit about how the business is run?
There is a component of that in that course, teaching students, you know, the financial aspects, what, you know, profit margin, what do you have to do to make a profit in this industry? And depending upon what you're going to produce, I mean, you're not going to find anyone today going out and starting up a print newspaper. The costs are just too prohibitive. For one thing, you may not be able to find anyone to print. And you certainly can't afford to buy your own press. So most everything today is going to be digital and delivered online in probably multiple formats rather than just one. And while that limits your expenses, it also increases the necessary skill set. And it also means that you're going to have to know how to negotiate costs and expenses across different platforms and with different types of vendors. You've got to know how much to charge for your advertising to make enough money to pay for all these platforms you're going to be distributed upon,
right,
as well as to pay your employees if you're not going to be doing it all by yourself.
Right.
So there's a whole lot you have to consider that a lot of people don't think about. Oh, have you ever heard of payroll taxes?
you know, especially now that it's a gig. It's gig kind of based now. You know, there's tons of freelance going on, and we need to tell these kids.
Yeah, hey, freelance don't forget, is huge.
Set some stuff aside for taxes at the end. And I think National Geographic, didn't they just eliminate all of their full-time writers, and now it's all freelance kind of thing?
Yep.
It's insane. But you can make a pretty good living. You just have to be savvy, you know, and network and be interesting and compelling.
Yeah. In addition to being a great storyteller, you have to be a business person.
Yep.
Right.
Because freelancing is a business.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do freelancing, you've got to know all of that tax stuff. You've got to know all of that business stuff. Because you're going to get hit hard at the end of the year when spent all of your freelance income on your living expenses and suddenly you have nothing to pay the IRS.
Right. Does that lead to some interplay with the other parts of your school to bring in that knowledge from other teachers or other professors?
Yes.
How do you build that program that honestly probably didn't exist until a few years ago?
Well, we sit down with faculty from other departments when we know we're going to need those. And we have a lot of cross-class instruction that goes on. We have classes that our students have to take over in business, computer science, art, even in recreation science for the sports media majors, so that they're learning the business side, the bricks and mortar side of an industry that they ordinarily have historically not had to learn in our programs. I never took a business class as a copy editing major, not once. But now they have to take that. It's how we get them through the program. And then there's, when we have a module on something like that, that one of our faculty aren't very strong in, then a faculty member from another area of campus who is strong in that guest lectures in that and helps present that material. But it's, and then, we even have some classes that are completely team taught as a result of that. So I'm part of an advertising class that is team taught with faculty from art, computer science, and business.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, I think that's another topic we've talked about a lot that I think it's important. When we all first came in, there was a giant brick wall between advertising and editorial, right? And now it's I call it a thin veil. That's also kind of a good thing, though, I think, as we understand, and I say we as the editorial, that's where I came up as the editorial side, as understanding that interplay of the business side and the content side, that you have to know both and you have to package how they work together.
But ethically, that it's still there, that the separation is still there, being fiercely independent and not beholden to an advertiser or even for nonprofits, those who are giving you grant money or underwriting, stuff. And so what I see more in the nonprofits is this hardcore transparency. These are our donors. These are those who are benefactors, and they list them out and they publish that stuff. If they write a story about a topic and it's critical of one of their benefactors, they will be transparent about that. So-and-so NPR does that all the time. So-and-so is an underwriter of blah, blah, blah. So I think it's still important to teach them that, the ethics of the separation, but understanding that we also need to be sustainable. It is still a business and we still need to pay you guys. Right. And that's where it goes back to telling these kids they have value and there is value in news. Early on, newspapers were slow to go online and have websites. And when they did, when we did go online, it was just, boom, here it is for free. And we totally screwed the pooch on that, right?
Yeah.
And now people expect news for free. And it costs money to make this stuff,
Well, I think some of that, too, is learning to recognize, hey, I'm working on this package. This would be a great thing for someone in the community to sponsor.
Right.
Like, it can still be independent and journalistic, but recognizing that it's something that a local business might want to be a part of and help you, deliver that package in the best way.
Yeah, so I did go
and
back.
For student,
go ahead.
I was going to say, for student media outlets that still have a major print component like ours, our biggest bread and butter are the special advertising supplements that we produce throughout the year that the editorial side cooperates with advertising on to produce the content for. Our welcome back guide for students, a housing guide, a dining guide, a homecoming guide, fall sports, spring sports, those kinds of things that advertisers flock to because they kind of have a captive audience with that because of the distribution point. One of the nice things about being at Northwest is you're almost guaranteed every year you're going to be able to produce some kind of national championship special edition, you know, and every business in town wants to congratulate the team for winning the national championship. So you can make money off of that too. So,
yeah. So Nick, I went back and I looked at your episode number 15 with the Richland Source, Richland Source.
Yeah.
And it was really heartening to hear, and I believe he was the publisher, right?
Yes.
Talk about how he works with his reporters on special projects. What do you guys need? What sort of resources do you need? And sort of like in his mind, compiling how much money he needs to make that happen. And then I think he's even transparent about like, who should we avoid? What sort of, organization should we avoid to not have that conflict of interest kind of present in this project? So it's really heartening to see there are publishers out there who are doing that, who are working with the news side, but not telling them, not steering the content, but what do you need to make this content happen? You know?
Yeah. And I think that's the interplay I try to talk about when I was talking about how it's more of a veil now, because I think you've got to have that. Those two parts have to work together. And you and I, you mentioned earlier, you and I had a fantastic publisher that helped teach that. It was the first time a person let me into the business side and to see how that worked and how they affected each other. So we had a good education, but not everybody's getting that. And I think this is, Steven, I think this is a credit to the program that you're building there that has that business and media class to learn. I want to switch gears a little bit, and I want to go back and talk about kind of more of the editorial side of training journalists. This is a thing that's becoming bigger and bigger. And Matt, I know it's something that you've looked into a lot, and that's solutions journalism. That's teaching our students to find a problem and not just tell the story, hey, here's a problem, but to follow it all the way through for the community. How are you approaching that? Because it's a hard thing to learn how to cover and report.
It's interesting because it's nothing new. You know, everything about solutions journalism already has existed forever. It's enterprise reporting, it's investigative reporting, it's just, and it's filling in the gaps. You know, if you turn in a story and your editor is like, this isn't finished, you know, there are some gaps here. That's what solutions journalism is. It's turning in a story and it's just talking about the problem, you know, this problem focused kind of stuff that has been ingrained in us, like this system is broken, it doesn't work, the end. No, it's this solutions oriented journalism is this is broken. And you know what? I reached out across state lines and found a nonprofit somewhere that was addressing this problem. And so I feel like the Solutions Journalism Network has a tough road to climb in terms of like getting buy-in from old school editors and reporters who are problem oriented and who look at solutions journalism as just like fluff, that it's just hero worship. We're just worshiping these people who are doing great things, but it's not, man. It's enterprising. It's finding your own stories, finding the problems, identifying the problems, but then finish the story. How have people addressed this problem? They're on the solutions journalism, network website, there was a video of a guy. He was an investigative reporter in Portland, and now he's a teacher. Now he's teaching journalism, and he was talking about the local officials were kind of beside themselves with this opioid problem. People were overdosing on opioids, and oh gosh, we don't know what to do about it. And he said, "Hey guys," in his newsroom, "find out what other people are doing about this." And a reporter came back with a story about Narcan. And Narcan is this magic drug. It's amazing. You spray it up the nose when somebody is overdosing and it brings them back to life like that. But I think in Oregon, the problem was it had to be administered by like a physician or something. Mm-hmm. But this reporter found that other states were allowing wider use of Narcan. And that influenced the legislature in Oregon to change the law. So here's the problem. People are overdosing. It's terrible. Okay, what are people doing about it? How are others doing it better? I mean, that's where kind of the solutions journalism lives. You know, these four pillars, there's a response to the problem. How does it work? What is the evidence? What is the impact? What is the insight? How can other people replicate this thing? And then what are the limitations? It's not a magic bullet solution, and it's not fluff. It's not hero worship. It's good investigative enterprising journalism. It's like I said, it's something that's existed forever. It's just framing it differently. And it's how you pitch it to those editors who feel like that's somebody else is doing this. This isn't happening in our community. Why is this news here? Why is it news now? Well, boss, it's because we got a problem and this is how others have solved it. And we need to help empower people to solve that. And it's not only empowering people to solve problems, it's getting people interested in the news again. You know, it's so negative. I don't want to read the news because it's just about how people are dying from opioid deaths versus at the water cooler. Oh my God, did you read that story about how people are being saved? You know, how these communities are solving gun violence in our neighborhood. You know, it's interesting.
As educators, how are you teaching that skill set to tell a story that way? Or is it more you're trying to find to recognize the student that's kind of got it ingrained?
Absolutely. This is me preaching more than practicing again, because I'm so focused on the basics and the foundations and getting these kids into schools where we have articulation agreements with to transfer or go right into the industry. So for the longest time, I've taught in my intro to journalism class, what makes something newsworthy? What are those news values? Impact, proximity, timeliness, conflict, blah, blah, blah. And solutions. I've always had solutions on there. It's not story. People's stories don't just end when you hit the final terminal punctuation mark, you know, or hit publish. Our lives continue. So how have these people been affected? And how have they solved problems? But thinking about it differently now that I've done training with Solutions Journalism Network folks, it's changing the pitch. And that's something I need to do better to encourage students, because it's harder. It takes more work. It takes more effort to more reporting. How have other people done this? So I need to do better in encouraging these students to tweak the pitch a little bit. You know, give me the story in one sentence. Okay, give me the story in one sentence using the four pillars, you know. Run through all four of those things. And now we've got a solution, but not every story has to be a solution story. You know, we still have to give people the negative stuff, but it's just like framing it differently. How can we expand our thoughts? How can we expand our reporting and gosh, be more interesting?
I'm going to, if you'll allow a little bit of suck up here, Matt, I love hearing you talk about that. And I will say you are the first reporter I ever met who I watched actually pitch stories or say, hey, we need to explain what this is. And I'm going to use a total nerd example here. This was, I don't know, late 90s, early 2000s. You were covering City Beat and development, and there was a whole debate, as happens at every city hall, about TIF. Right. In Missouri, that's the public finance, you know, the incentives project,
which puts people to sleep.
Right. But you pitched.
But it's so important.
You pitched to our editor, I want to do a 3-part series and explain what this is. People need to know what they're talking about and what the political vitriol is.
Yep.
And, you know, at first came up sports guy. I rolled my eyes. I'm like, whatever. But it was a great little series. And it was really kind of my first into, oh, we can educate the public.
Right.
And we can dig a little deeper.
Yeah.
And so that's my little suck up move for Matt. And now that he's a teacher. The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Blox Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blox Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com.
You know, I think it's something that is becoming more and more important because there are more and more bigger, complex problems that journalists need to make people aware of. But people are so split and divided about what they want to read, and they don't want to read anything negative anymore. You know, I find it difficult to get my students focused on what I think is important. You know, when I ask my student what happened in the news yesterday, they'll tell me about Khloe Kardashian and Kim Kardashian and all these other Instagram people that I've never even heard of. And I'm like, what does that have to do with your life? Well, it's all I watch. And I'm like, how is that going to impact you tomorrow? Are you aware that the city just raised the sales tax 3%? So the next time you buy groceries, it's going to cost you this much. And they're like, Oh, yeah, I guess that's important.
Or potentially drive people out of your community to go shop elsewhere, and then your favorite stores close. Yeah.
Well, the advantage of being in Maryville is they can raise the taxes here. As long as it costs more to drive to St. Joseph than it does to pay the tax, they'll stay here and shop. Yeah. But for solutions journalism on campus, you know, I was thinking of some examples that my students have done. We had a student with a disability in our program who needed a wheelchair. And one day she was in the newsroom and just mentioned, you know, one thing that I'm getting irked about is every time I go to a building, half the time I can't get in because the push button doesn't work to open the door. And so the news editor popped up and she said, let's walk to every building on campus right now and see which ones you can get in, which ones you can't.
That's awesome.
And that's awesome. We did an interactive campus map that showed every door that day that worked and every door that didn't, and interviewed the other three students on campus who were also wheelchair bound. And talked about their struggles and how difficult it was to keep those doors functioning on campus. And then one of them mentioned the fact, oh, and whenever I go to this building, the elevator never works. And they keep having to move my class from the third floor to the first floor because they don't care about the elevator. And, you know, once we ran the story, suddenly that elevator was fixed within 2 weeks. And we ran a follow-up story, you know, 2-3 weeks later, which doors were still working, which doors weren't, was the elevator fixed? And, you know, boom, we had some solutions because it became an elevated issue beyond just three individuals who were impacted more than others. Then we did a similar one. We were like, what are some other stories like that we could do? And then one of the female students in the newsroom said, I don't feel safe walking around campus because it's so dark in all these areas. And so we're like, well, let's take a look. And what we found out was those areas were dark, not because they weren't lit, but because the bulbs were out in the street lamps that were on those sidewalks. And so we did a map of every street lamp on campus. And we had a team of students go out one night and mark every street light that didn't work.
Wow. That is awesome.
And within 2 weeks, there's maintenance workers in the day out putting in new light bulbs everywhere. And that became the follow-up story.
Yeah.
So. I think those lessons are great for veteran reporters and editors too. You know, you get a chance to do a lot of that when you're in school, but to remember to pay attention to the conversations in your community and those things that aren't, you know, at the top of the agenda on whatever beat you're covering, right? Yeah.
But it's not a one way road. I think Nick, when we came up through newspapers, it was kind of a one way road. It was us pushing news out to people. And that the gal from the Richland Source said something really awesome during your interview. That was a really great interview, by the way.
Thank you.
What did she say?
Mutual suck up.
Yes. It's journalism with our community versus journalism to our community. And finding ways to engage with people is so important. And I feel like that's not new either. You know, that if you look at, it's a newer book on ethics, Kelly McBride and Tom Rosenthal, The New Ethics of Journalism. One of their tenets is engage community as an end rather than as a means. So minimize harm, act independently, yes, but get to know them. What do they need? What information do they need to make informed decisions, to have a good quality of life? And that's where folks like the City Bureau in Chicago, and I'm going to toot their horn again, Outlier Media, live. They have these open newsrooms, these programs where they bring people in. They have a moderator from the community, like, what's on your mind? What's happening? Outlier Media, they have a SMS service. You sign up for their text alerts. You can text reporters, and then you can sign up for these text alerts they push out stuff to you that you need about housing, new development, utilities, and things like that. When I was an intern with the St. Louis Beacon, as I was getting my master's degree, when was that? 2011, 2012, something like that. The St. Louis Beacon was this nonprofit, online-only nonprofit news organization, and they had these things called Beacon and Eggs. And and an after hours deal. And it was just, they weren't covering it. They weren't there as like reporters. They were there to listen. They bring the community in, what's on your mind. And that informs their coverage versus just a one way road. Here, we're pushing stuff to you. You know, the community is the agenda. They live in it. You know, they need right. they need to tell us what's going on.
I feel like to me that's the best part of social media, and I am not a great social media manager. I'm really not awesome at pushing out my stuff. But what I love about it is paying attention to the groups and the other things that are happening there to see what's my community talking about. What do they think is the important conversation? And yeah. and my response might be just to chime in and dig deeper, or it might be, why are they talking about that? Shouldn't they really be talking about this? You know, what are the real things going on? But just that's a great way to keep tabs on what people are talking about in your community. Oh, yeah. What they think is important.
100%. And so that's something I kind of drill into my student media kids is don't shovel. You know, for the longest time, it was the problem with newspapers and websites was they were just shoveling stuff from the newspaper onto the website. And now it's shoveling stuff from the newspaper to the website to social media. It all looks the same. So instead, how about 60% of stuff that we post on social media is curated, that we pay attention to what Main Street, downtown Main Street is posting on their socials, what the city is posting, what Parks and Rec is posting, you know, all these different agencies, what are they posting? And then sharing it or retweeting or whatever platform it is and commenting on it. You know, hey, Main Street has a program Friday night, blank. And then you become the authority. You become that outlet that people look to for what is Main Street talking about versus just Main Street. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So 60% is curated, 30% is owned. So you're not watering down your social. 30% of stuff that you've posted online, now you're sharing on. We're talking about weekly here. 60% curated, 30% owned, and then 10% is the self-promotion, the call to action. You've earned their attention. You've earned the ability to say now, hey, can you guys, we have a special promotion going on or, advertise with us or blah, 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 you know? So it's more parsed out than just like hitting you over the head with your own stuff constantly, but paying, like you said, it's paying attention to what is coming across these feeds and 60% of that you should be sharing.
Steve, as we wrap up, I want to pay attention to our time here because I have like two other topics I wanted to get to, but we won't keep people for a 3-hour show. How much are you teaching that it's, you know, curation is a part of the job, right? Like it's not just how do you package the individual story, it's how do you package
right
everything. How big a percentages mean, you can't really say that, but how much of that education is there?
Well, we have a class on that too called Social Media Strategies that focuses on that. But in the newsroom, you know, all of our media outlets now have a social media manager whose job is to curate and work on that.
Wow.
You know, 5 years ago, that was not a paid position in our newsroom. Today it is.
We rotate ours. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just become it has to be a focus because every one of these students are going to have to do some kind of social media work when they go out and get their real world jobs. It may be their full-time job. It may be their part-time job, or it may just be embedded in whatever their job description is, but they're going to have to do social media. And, you know, several of my best reporters have landed their first jobs in large part because of how well they handled social media as a student. Their social media feeds were so popular that it helped get them their first job.
Yeah, the importance of branding yourself is so different than I mm-hmm. you know that it used to be. Like you have to create kind of this persona on the socials, and people will follow you, and that becomes huge for the news organization because then that's bringing people to your outlet.
Yeah, and I think that's where Gawker, you know, got its start and having these brands of being outlandish, you know, and getting traffic. And that's outside of what we should be talking about because it was outlandish and ridiculous, but you know what? It brought in investors like nobody's business and then got them in a lot of trouble later on.
But you know, you talk about sports coverage, right? Like think of the big sports writers. They are huge brands on mm-hmm. Twitter, on Instagram, right? I mean, you follow those people because that's the thing you want to know about. And when they move outlets, you move outlets too, because that's where that person is.
Threads, right? Now it's Threads.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now it's Threads. We'll see. We'll see. I joined up, but there's not a lot of activity yet. But again, I'm bad at
it. It just seems like Instagram.
I saw somebody yesterday post. I'll straight up retweet a thread and rethread a tweet.
Well, what are your thoughts on the Athletic now being, you know, they purchased by the New York Times, and now the New York Times is laying off. It's, I don't know if it's laying off, but it's shifting its sports department to the Athletic.
The Times said they weren't going to lay anyone off. So,
but they trimmed 20 positions at the Athletic. Is that before that happened? Mm-hmm.
Earlier this year, yeah.
It'll be a slow decline.
I think mm-hmm. In some ways it makes sense. In some ways it's not surprising. I think the Athletic is, and Stephen, you mentioned earlier, it is a great product. I mean, there are right. some fantastic storytellers in that organization, and that's
well, the Times spent $500 million to buy it, yeah. So they saw value in it.
Well, and I think too, we're seeing an ability on the business side, like you are more sustainable if you are focused on a niche, right? Mm-hmm. So what they have done is said, okay, here's our sports niche, and we can pull from it to put into the Times. I don't know. I don't know that it's a horrible thing. It's shocking a little bit, but mm-hmm. Just because it's such a change at a major American institute of journalism, right? But it makes sense to me a little bit. I mean, I would think you feel bad for people who are going to move to different parts of the newspaper, but I think the possibility of the sports reporting getting even better is there too. So I don't know.
I like your optimism.
Well, good, because that's going to lead me to my final question for you guys. You have the students, you have the next generation for our business in your classrooms, in your student newsrooms. How do you feel about the future?
Steve, you want to go first? No, wait. I don't want to follow. Let me go first. You follow me. So the question, how do we feel about the future?
Yeah.
You know, I'm optimistic. Like I said, when I see the lights come on with that accounting student sitting in my intro to mass media class, like, oh my gosh, this is something I'm interested in and I can do. I'm that person turning that light on, and I want to keep, that's why I'm doing this, you know? So I feel like when they are interested, boy, howdy, are they invested versus somebody just coming in to see what it's like. And then they bounce, and that makes me feel bad, you know? But so we have a middle college program on our campus. It's a high school. It's a 5-year program. They get a diploma at the end and an associate degree at the end. Those kids are so bright. And when they come in, they are super committed. And I feel like it's catching, you know, it's contagious to some of the others who come in and aren't as committed. But then suddenly they're competing, you know. We don't have a whole lot of interest in journalism, but I feel like it is sort of it's coming along. And if you show dedication to the paper, I will pay your way to New York City. Every spring we go to the College Media Association conference in New York City. And that's like the big thing for these kids who sometimes never get out of our little town. So I don't know. I try to inspire them. And what I get in return is some really interesting content on our platforms.
Awesome. Steven?
Oh yeah. I mean, my students are super optimistic about the future, or they wouldn't be doing the work they do.
Yeah.
You know, they love journalism. They love media. It's what they want to do. Sometimes, you know, what they want to do is not what I want them to do. but you know, it's not about me, it's about them.
Yep.
So that's what the focus has to be.
Yeah. As advisors for student media and members of College Media Association, you know, Stephen and I follow their code of ethics, and as advisors, we're not editors, and it's a laboratory experience where they go in there. This is where they break their lap, their test tubes and what, you know what I mean? They go in and we allow them to make, it sounds terrible, but we allow them to make mistakes because they need to be fiercely independent. That's what it's like in the real world. We're not the editors.
I had a conversation with somebody recently and we were talking about hiring new people. And he said, this was a great line. I want to hire the one that's already done it and made all the mistakes. I don't want the one that comes out of school or out of another job perfectly trained. I want the one who's done it and screwed up, because they're going to have experience and stories, right, and a way to get through stuff.
I'm not saying we let them sink. You know, yeah, we're there as advisors to, they know we're there, and they constant, and I'm sure Stephen, you have this experience as well. They're constantly like, hey, should I do this? Should I do that? Who should I talk to? You know, it's, I absolutely love that. I will give them advice, and I say, use it how you see fit. You know, I'm not telling you, mm-hmm, you should pursue this story, but guys, there's a big story here. Don't get scooped by the local daily.
Right. Well, and with that, you know, I want to bring up the example of why student journalism right now is having its moment. And that's Northwestern football and Northwestern athletics.
That's a great example.
And, you know, their student newspaper last week, you know, reported what no one else had reported, what was really going on in the football program. And, you know, that report came out after the coach had been suspended, and then their report resulted in the coach getting fired.
Amazing.
And, yeah, you know, the love that program got on social media from professional journalists for their reporting was stellar. And, you know, the tweet that I retweeted and praised most of all came from Pat Forty, which was, colleges, fund your student journalism program. And, you know, he retweeted their link. And, you know, I'm like, damn straight, fund our programs. You know, when we report this kind of news, colleges tend to cut our money because they don't want that negative publicity.
Right.
And, you know, here you have professional journalists saying they're doing the best journalism we've seen. You should be funding this on a daily basis. Because while it may give your college a black eye in this area, it's giving your college a very positive eye in this area.
Yep.
Because the professional media are sitting up and taking notice of what your students are doing.
Yep.
Right.
Well said.
Well, and one of the hardest lessons to learn is to do that hard story and ask those questions and then put out in the public the thing that's going to give whoever it is you're covering the black eye.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, for student media in particular, to do that to sports is really hard,
mm-hmm,
because that athletic department will cut you off.
Oh my God. It's insane. You're right.
Yeah.
It's already hard enough to talk to these college athletes, and you have to go through the sports information. Is this the case at on your campus? You have to go through the SID in order to interview somebody. And if you don't, you're cut off, you know, it's ridiculous.
Right. Well, Stephen, Matt, hey, thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. I appreciate your insight into the college training of our student journalists and into the industry as well. And appreciate your work that you're doing. Thank you guys.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
That'll wrap us up for this episode. We'll talk to everybody next time. The News Nirvana podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your favorite podcast apps. The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com. The News Nirvana podcast is produced by Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.